Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back out of his seat. To the track. To the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show today from the Guy Harvey Outpost of Tradewinds Island Resorts on St. Pete Beach, our last such program before the All-Star break. This week, we'll get perspective on Alex Colomé making the All-Star team from Rays coaches, plus get to know more about Brandon Guyer. Today is the Futures game, and we'll hear from the three participants for the Rays. Plus, we'll chat with Cliff Floyd of MLB Network, and Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times will join us live from Boston. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. It certainly has been a challenging season for the Rays, especially the past 4 weeks. But a bright spot has been All-Star Alex Colomé. He's been perfect in 19 save attempts, and I asked pitching coach Jim Hickey if he saw this coming.
From where we were a year ago and even where we were in spring training, I think he's probably exceeded everybody's expectations and probably even secretly his own. You know, the fact that he's pitched so well in save situations in particular is really, really telling. And it's a guy that really doesn't have that type of experience at the end of a ball game, but he certainly does now, and it's really, really refreshing.
What has it meant for you to see someone take to it so quickly, to evolve so quickly? Because for most, going from starter to reliever is challenging.
He did a very nice job going from starter to reliever, even before he was the closer. You know, he's had some experience in winter ball also, and that's a very, very high-stress environment down there when you're playing in those ball games, especially in the championship, you know, during the championship round, which lasts 4 or 5 weeks at times. But the fact that he took to, you know, the ninth inning so seamlessly, like I said earlier, a little bit of a surprise, you know, to me. But, you know, it doesn't bowl you over because he had the stuff. First of all, absolutely positively always had the stuff, and he always had the attitude and the intestines for it as well.
I spoke with you last year when he had that really good outing in Houston, and I think you compared his ability to make the transition almost quicker than a Wade Davis. So in hindsight, is it maybe not as surprising that he was that good that quick?
Well, yeah, no, absolutely, because, you know, he did make the transition quicker than Wade did. And Wade, of course, turned into, you know, one of probably the top five relief pitchers in all of baseball. And I guess you could probably make that argument with Alex also. So, you know, I guess looking back on that specific conversation, maybe I ought to be a little bit less surprised. But like I said, I'm a little bit surprised, but I'm not, you know, blown away by it.
One of the big things he did when he made that transition was the change in repertoire to kind of pare things down. How difficult is that, and why do you think he was able to do it so well?
I don't think it's all that difficult to kind of pare it down, especially when you're talking about, for the most part, getting three outs. You know, if you're talking about adding a pitch or learning something new, I think that is extremely more difficult than maybe eliminating a curveball or eliminating a changeup, especially when you have two, you know, pretty dominant pitches in the fastball and in the cutter or slider, whatever you want to call it. So you still see the occasional bigger breaking ball, but I would say 97-98% of his offerings are the hard fastball or the hard cutter.
When we see him on the mound, we see that, I don't know if I would say stoic, but a pretty calm demeanor, you know, that focus. What do you see when you work with him? Is there a sense of humor? What's he like away from his outings on the mound?
Actually, he's a pretty funny guy. He does have a good sense of humor, but he definitely has that stoicism. I think the thing that strikes me is he has no fear whatsoever. And if you look back on a couple specific games this year, one in Arizona where he loaded the bases with nobody out and Paul Goldschmidt standing there and allowed no runners to score. And another one, I think it was here at home in the exact same situation. He loaded the bases with nobody out and ended up getting out of that as well. Those two examples right there, those are pretty telling, because that's not just a, you know, it wasn't a bit of luck. It could be a bit of luck where you get a line drive and Longo catches it and steps on third, you know, and now you pop the next guy up. But he made pitches when the bases were loaded and nobody out against a couple of the league's best hitters, and he did it on a couple of occasions, so it was no accident.
And that is Rays pitching coach Jim Hickey on Alex Colomé, who's been the consistent arm in the Tampa Bay bullpen. And bullpen coach Stan Baroski had similar praise for Colomé.
I believe it's the attitude with which he takes the ball. It is, give me the ball and get out of my way. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to attack the strike zone with everything I have, and good luck hitting it.
Usually when a guy goes from starter to reliever, there's a transition period. There didn't seem to be much. What were the biggest things that you guys helped him with to adjust to that new role?
Well, I think him understanding that he couldn't throw every day and that the daily conditioning was a little bit different than he was used to as a starter, and getting used to the ups and downs of the bullpen as far as you're up, you're loose, then you have to sit back down, then you might get up again the next inning, and just transitioning the arm and the body to be able to do that type of thing.
You also don't use your repertoire as much in terms of all the kinds of pitches he had. Looks like everything got simplified.
Yeah, for sure. He's not out there trying to, quote-unquote, pitch as much as he is just going out there and attacking the strike zone. And he has some really, really power stuff coming out of the pen, and he's able to utilize that to the max.
What's the level of pride to see a guy make that transition so quickly and do so well in his first full year in the role?
It just makes me feel great. And, you know, I couldn't be more happy for him. I couldn't be more happy for us as an organization to have a young man like that represent us at the All-Star game, and looking forward to watching him there.
Obviously, we see what he's like on the mound, but what is he like off the mound in the bullpen during the game? Is he serious? Is he funny? What's kind of his demeanor?
Well, he's funny. He's loose. He's under control. He's relaxed until it's time to go. And then when it's time to go, he flips the switch and the serious face comes on and he's ready to go.
Rays bullpen coach Dan Borowski is right. Alex Colome has been impressive out of the Rays pen since day one this season. Colome's work has impressed his coaches and teammates like Evan Longoria.
He's been our most consistent piece down there in the bullpen. And also, being that he was a converted starter, you know, going into that role is not easy. And so he's handled it. He's handled it, I mean, obviously like an all-star and better than I think anyone in here would have put any kind of expectations on him. You know, his stuff has always been there. It's just when you move a guy into a closer's role from a starter, you never know what's going to happen. And he's been unbelievable. His mentality, the way he's handled it, and like I said, just very deserving of being an all-star.
Evan, why do you think he succeeded in that transition so well? Because there are a lot of guys who don't.
I think a lot of it, I mean, you hear that term closer mentality a lot, and you know, the first part of that is just belief in your stuff and belief that, you know, if you get into trouble, that you're going to be able to pitch out of it. And at the same time, being calm, you know, I think when we had Grant here, he was kind of the opposite. You know, he needed to amp himself up to go out there and get it done. And some guys are like that. And I think Alex is the opposite. He's always pretty even keel. And even when faced with tremendous adversity, if he gets a couple guys on and we're only up a run, I mean, he never really panics. And he's gotten the job done in some tough situations. And we've asked a lot out of him too, you know, to pitch multiple innings and come in some situations where a closer may not come in, and he's handled it very well.
And that's Evan Longoria on Alex Colome, the Rays All-Star. Now, Longoria handled not making the All-Star team extremely well, too. The Rays third baseman certainly is deserving. He's on a pace for a personal record in extra base hits. And I asked hitting coach Derek Shelton why Longoria has had this kind of season.
He's been really consistent. I think we've seen him drive the ball to all fields. We've seen his power, you know, come back in streaks where we've seen it in the past, but he's been able to maintain it. And I think his swing's probably in the best place we've seen it in the last couple of years.
He talked during the season about the slight adjustment that he made, opening his stance a little bit. How much did that help him, do you think?
I think it helped him. I think it put him in a position where, you know, we talked about this winter where we wanted his hands and his feet to be, and I think just the slight adjustment he made in terms of where he put his feet was able to enable him to get the rest of his swing in the right slot.
And that leads more to the power than anything? Or
I think it leads to him being in a better hitting position, which in essence leads to him driving the ball more. And I think we're seeing the balls that he's driven now get out of the ballpark.
This ball club certainly hasn't put up the runs you'd hope for with all the injuries, but they have hit the home run ball more. Do you think that's also helped him relax a little bit, that he has confidence that some other guys provide maybe a little more protection in the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think our lineup is deeper. I mean, it's not as deep as we want it to be just because of the injuries and when we lost guys, but I think he's been protected a little bit more. more, and I think it has helped him a little bit.
And the mental side of the game, how critical is that for a guy like Evan, who knows that he's still going to be circled in purple as the guy in the lineup?
Yeah, he's going to be. I mean, you know, he's the guy that I think everybody talks about in their advanced meeting when they come in to face the Rays. But mentally, he's tough. Mentally, he prepares as well as anybody probably I've ever been around, and he grinds it. I mean, he's a guy that goes out and plays every day regardless of how he feels, and mentally that's difficult, and I think he's really a mentally tough guy.
That's hitting coach Derek Shelton on Evan Longoria, who's impressed with 19 homers, 47 ribbies, leading the Rays going into the All-Star break. Coming up, get to know more about Brandon Guyer. We continue after this. This is This Week in Rays Baseball on the Rays Baseball Network.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our feature guest this week is outfielder Brandon Guyer. And Brandon, first of all, it's good to have you back in the lineup now on a regular basis. How are you feeling here as you've come back from really your first leg injury as a professional?
Yeah, I feel good. You know, like you said, I've never really had hamstring issues before. Muscular-wise, it's really just kind of been oblique. So it was a different kind of rehab. I didn't know what to expect, but got a lot of good work in with the trainers and was smart with it, and you know, I feel pretty good.
What were the biggest challenges? I mean, you had more, I would say, freak injuries during the course of your career to this point. What's the hardest part about sitting out?
Just not being able to go to battle with the guys. You know, we're here every day putting the work in, and you know, this is what I love to do. This is my job. So to be on the bench watching them, you know, best I can do is to cheer them on when I'm hurt. But obviously, I want to be out there with them and try to help them win and just be out there with the guys. So that was really tough. And you know, personally, I was starting to play a lot and everything, so it came. There's no good time to get hurt, but you know, so that kind of stunk. But you know, it is what it is, and I'm back now.
Was there anything you learned through the process? I mean, was there anything that you could have done preventatively or gotten yourself a day off here or there before that? Or it happens, it happens.
Possibly. You know, I look back on it. I first felt it the first day in Kansas City. Kept playing with it for I think it was 4 days, and it was getting worse. And, you know, I kept getting treatment. And, you know, if I were to say something, I regret not being smarter about it the first time I felt it catch in Kansas City. But there's multiple reasons why I didn't. You know, I wanted to keep to stay in the lineup, and I've never had a big hammy problem, so I wasn't sure if it was just tightness or what. But you know, can always look back and regret things, but it happened, and you know, I'm just glad I'm back.
Is that kind of the hardest part of, you know, what probably the fan doesn't understand is how much you actually end up playing through during the course of the season, aside from the actual injuries that can sideline you?
For sure. I think a lot of guys game one of the season aren't 100% because you go through spring training, you're playing a lot. Maybe that first day in spring training you're 100%, but everyone's going to go through you know, certain rough patches, you know, soreness, pain, whatever. But you know, that's why you go in the training room, do what you can to get out on the field, and just go out there and grind, and just be smart and know your body and know how much you can push it, and you know, when it's a difference from soreness and pain and when it's something that you can make a lot worse. You know, and that's what I finally said something about my hamstrings. I knew I was one more sprint away from really, really messing it up. So it's a fine line. It's tough.
I know you're a big fan of UFC, maybe the biggest one in the clubhouse. How is a UFC fighter like a baseball player has to get through a 162-game season?
Yeah, you know, with them, you see they're fighting. They have broken, you know, in the middle of the fight, they'll break a hand, break a finger, break a toe. But for them, they have so much adrenaline going. I think they don't really feel it till after the fight. But even with them, just seeing their interviews and hearing them talk after the fights, they always say they go in there very sore and hurt just from all the training and sparring that they do just to get ready for the fight. So I guess it's similar in that way that, you know, they're going into their individual battle probably a little sore and have some pain like we do. So
do you have a favorite UFC fighter or a favorite weight class to watch? And if so, what is it?
No favorite weight class. I like them all. it's easy. I like Conor McGregor. I mean, he's a big name right now. He's just, I just like his training, how he trains movement and stuff like that. And I try to put that into a lot of my training this off season, just to try to be more functional and smart with the way I trained. So I like, that's the thing I like about UFC guys, is watching the background, watching what they do to get to the fight. And then he talks a big game and he backs it up. So he's fun to watch. And I'm really into the women, you know, watching them fight. And, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go with Conor, but I like all weight classes, and I really just like to watch all the fights.
What weight class would you be in, and would you ever, if you were not in baseball, could you ever see yourself doing something like that?
Yeah, if I wasn't in baseball, I probably would. It's just, you know, I'm too late in my life to even want to start trying to do that stuff. But if I started early, you know, before my 20s and stuff, when the next generation of fighters, they're starting when they're 10 years old, I could see myself doing that. But what weight class I would fight in, walk around 205, 210. So I probably cut down to middleweight. I think that's 185. That'd be, even though there's some big dudes there, I might want to go down to 170, but that's cutting a lot of weight. So I'm going to say 185 right now.
I thought it was interesting you said Conor McGregor, because you like to smack talk. You don't seem like a guy who would be into a guy. You don't talk a lot of smack, or at least it doesn't appear to.
Yeah, no, but he's the guy that he goes out there, and every time you hear him talk, he's going to go back it up, though. For me personally, I don't do that a lot, but maybe because I don't do it is the reason I like watching him do it. I don't know how that works, but he's just very entertaining, and he catches your eye, and so I respect that about him.
Will Lindsay watch UFC matches with you? And if so, does she have a favorite?
Yeah, she watches just about all of them. You know, nowadays with two kids, she goes to bed a little earlier, which is understandable. So she's not watching all of them, but she enjoys it. She's gotten into it. She's gone to a couple live events with me. What's her favorite fighter? I don't know. I think she likes John Jones a lot. She interviewed him back in D.C. when she was working for Fox for one of his big fights, and he was really cool with her, and they had a cool interview at some restaurant. So I'm going to say John Jones.
For people who don't know, obviously, Lindsay was a former TV anchor before you guys started a family, and I know a couple of weeks back she did the hosting, co-hosted the Rays on the Runway. What did it mean to see her get to do that and kind of do something that meant so much to the Rays community?
Oh, it was great. You know, that's something she loves to do. She's such a natural at it, too. And when the opportunity came, you know, she just volunteered and said she would do it if they wanted her. And she's emceed some events in the past. And for me, I wasn't able to be out there a ton just because I was in the back getting dressed and walking the runway and also watching our kids in the daycare area. But after we walked, when they were doing the live auctions, I went out into the actual crowd and watched her do her thing. And no, I was really proud of her. She did it, and she did it for, it was something for a great cause, and she absolutely loved doing it. And I've heard, you know, a lot of people said how good she did, and, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all.
And you mentioned your kids. You were watching at that time, Riley and Camden. You've got a boy and a girl now. What are the biggest challenges now that you guys are even strength in terms of parents versus kids?
It's definitely double duty. You know, Lindsay does so much. I mean, she gets up during the night with them. She's basically with them all day, and especially when I'm on the road, it's all her. So it's a lot of work. You know, for her, she tries to get any time she can to just go get a workout in and stuff. Even that's hard for her to do. So she's so worried about taking care of them and doesn't have much time for herself. So it's definitely challenging, but it's the coolest thing in the world, and we're really blessed and lucky to have a daughter and son that we do.
How are each like you? I know they're very young, so it's probably harder to tell, but how are Riley and Camden each like you, and how are they each like Lindsay?
Riley, she's almost like, I feel like I have a boy, like the way she just throws herself, like always running in, jumping and just going, running around crazy. So I think, and she's always has a bat in her hands, like hitting off ball off the tee, so I'm going to say in that aspect, she's like me. Camden, I don't know, he doesn't really do much right now. He's just kind of chill, so I say maybe in that way he's like me, because I feel like I'm pretty chill and everything. And how they're like Lindsay, I don't know, I mean, Riley's beautiful, like her, so I'm going to say that. And Camden is just a great person, like Lindsay, so I'm going to go with that, too.
There you go. You've won points. You mentioned, you know, some of the things you do to try and, you know, deal with some of the injuries that you've had and how you've battled. I'm curious from a nutrition standpoint. You're known as one of the cleaner eaters on the team. So what are some of the things you do that may be unique to what a baseball player would do or unique to most?
Well, I put a lot of time into preparing, and I'll just say for like road trips, I have a whole carry-on bag where it's just food. So it's, you know, I can have just healthy, I don't know, granola or just healthy snacks with me on the road in case I'm ever hungry. So I don't have to go to, you know, go anywhere from the hotel and maybe not be the healthiest alternative. So I do that. Archer and I always try to go to a Whole Foods or some sort of store on the road and stock up at the field and get that good food into us. But you know, I feel like nowadays more and more guys are doing it. They realize how good it can be for you, give you energy and keep you healthy. So I think in that way I'm a little different.
Most unique food in the carry-on bag, and are these all things that your family would eat?
No, they wouldn't eat it all. I'm gonna say kale chips right now are the most unique. A lot of people hate on them, but I feel like if you actually try them, they're pretty good. Once you get over like the texture and out of your head that it's kale chips, I actually really love them. So I'll go with that. And no, my family, Riley might. We haven't even tried it yet, but I know Lindsay wouldn't touch them.
You're about to get some family time. All-Star break coming up here. What does the All-Star break mean, and how important is it for family time before the second half?
It's awesome. You know, it's time to, after the grind of the first half, give your body a little rest. And, you know, you're on the road so much and at the field so much, even when you're home, you're not around your family a lot, especially just like the family here with you. But the family, you know, back in Maryland for me and Virginia, you know, I get to see them more during the All-Star break. So that's huge. And, you know, it'll come at a great time. And I'm really excited for it. And it always goes by so fast because it's so much fun and everything, but we all love it.
And this is the All-Star break tradition for you? Where do you go?
Yeah, we go to Ocean City, Maryland. So I'll probably stay the extra night in Boston, then fly to Salisbury, the closest hotel or closest airport, and then stay there for 3 days, fly back here. So, yeah, it works out. Our family always has their vacation during that time, and it works out with the All-Star game.
Well, enjoy the rest, the relaxation, and hopefully refreshed for play after the break. We appreciate a few minutes on This Week in Rays Baseball.
All right, thank you.
That's Brandon Guyer joining us. We'll continue right after this on the Rays Baseball Network.
Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. Neil Solon's with you. Joining us now to discuss the week gone by from Boston is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Topper, thanks very much for being with us.
Come on, Neil. You know it's always my pleasure and my highlight.
Of course. And that's the way it's written in the script. Let's start with what you summarized
today. Wait, we have a
today.
Script? We have a script?
You've been following it to a T.
Okay.
You've been great.
Okay, got it.
Let's start with what you touched on today in the Times, and that's the good and certainly more of the bad of this first half. Was it easy for you to come up with the best part of and the most valuable player on this team from now until the break?
Well, it actually was, Neil, because I think, you know, any of us that have been around the team, it's hard not to be impressed with the season Evan Longoria has had, and in a way maybe even enhanced by the fact that there's been so much bad going on around him, and he's having such a good year. I mean, potentially career best numbers, power numbers, you know, the projections he's right on are better than his career highs and a lot of things. So I think that was pretty clear, although you could make a pretty good case for Alex Colom. I mean, it's hard to beat perfection, and this was a guy that wasn't supposed to be the closer, stepping in, done so well. So those two guys, to me, stand far out and above everything else that has happened here. I mean, you can look at some specific things. Forsythe's played well when he's been healthy. Pierce was good when he was healthy. You know, Brad Miller's hit, you know, probably in exceeding the expectations that the Rays had, but, you know, then you have to factor in the defense. So I think Longoria and Colom are clearly the two biggest bright spots of this season.
And you had a lot of choices on the disappointments. You went with Chris Archer. Hopefully people will read what you wrote about it in the Tampa Bay Times, and I certainly impress upon them to do so. But kind of summarize why you went with Archer.
Well, you know, to me it was actually a debate between Archer and Smiley, although I did throw up a Twitter poll, and Archer's running away with that for whatever that's worth from the fan standpoint, or at least the ones clicking on the Twitter account on TBTimes_Rays. But I think to me is Chris Archer as much because of what he represented as well as the success he had. I mean, he did struggle in the second half last year. I think it was easy for many of us to gloss over that because he had such a good first half. He was the All-Star representative. But coming into this season, it was clear that Chris Archer was put into or took upon himself that leadership role in the pitching staff. And he was the guy that was going to lead that staff. That staff was going to be a big part of the reason the Rays were going to do so well. It was considered one of the best staffs in all of baseball. I wrote that myself, so I'm as guilty as anyone of buying into the hype and perpetuating that hype. But that it just has not been there. And I think, to me, what stands out with Chris Archer is that it's been this frustrating reason. It's not like, okay, he was hurt, and that's why he has a pitch well. Or there's something, you know, hitters are on to his slider. It's not working anymore. It's just been kind of the same answer of he's not aggressive enough. He has trouble in the first inning, then he pitches better. So I think there's things that if you look at it from the outside, you'd think should be correctable. So all of that funnels into the silo of why I picked him as the most disappointing player.
And you mentioned he's healthy, but certainly a lot of Rays have not, and it made sense to have Kevin Kiermaier at the top of the impactful injuries.
No doubt. And again, I think, you know, if you're around this team, you know how much energy Kevin Kiermaier brings, Neil. I mean, you've been in that clubhouse many, many times, and Kiermaier's the guy that just kind of gets guys up. He gets guys to not feel sorry for themselves, to realize, you know, the joy that they have of playing Major League Baseball. And he's an energy guy, and I know he's around at home, but it's just different. When you're not an active player, you know, you just can't kind of carry the team. You can't have as big of a presence as you do, and I think it's just one of those things, the way baseball works. He hasn't been on the road until this trip. So having Kevin Kiermaier back will like literally and figuratively spark the lineup. I think he'll bring a lot of energy. He'll give the fans someone to cheer for and watch. It's been kind of a frustrating year all the way around because some of the fan favorites have been disappointing. You know, we talked about Archer previously. So I think Kevin Kiermaier will add a lot. But to me, you know, from the moment he got hurt in Detroit, I mean, just literally, if you count that game as one of the losses, just their record since he got hurt has been abysmal, and that's a huge reason why.
No doubt. And, yeah, Alex Colome makes the All-Star game, and we heard from some of his coaches earlier on the program. What has impressed you most about Alex?
Well, I'm going to agree with Kevin Cash on this and Longoria. I've talked to both of them about this, and I totally agree. It's how calm Alex Colome has been in this situation. I mean, we've all seen pitchers that get thrust into, you know, kind of get elevated. They get promoted from pitching in the sixth and seventh inning to then the pitching in the eighth, and then suddenly they're pitching in the ninth, and everyone tells you those last three outs are different. And we've seen a lot of guys, Neil, go out there, and they have that deer in the headlights look. They look scared. They look frantic. They don't have their best stuff because they can't handle the pressure even they put on themselves and the perceived and the real pressure. Alex Colome, he looks the same. You couldn't tell if he was pitching the sixth inning or the ninth inning. And, you know, Longoria said he goes out to the mound and he usually looks in the pitcher's eyes and that gives him a good feel for what's going to happen. And he said he can't think of a time that he hasn't been out there and Colome just had that look like, I got this. And that's been most impressive. I mean, we know he's got a great fastball. He's got that great slider cutter. You know, he's thinned down his repertoire. He's been aggressive. He's thrown strikes, all the standard things for a pitcher. But to me, that he could step into that role, never having done it before in the minors or the majors, he did do it a little bit in winter ball, and do so well. It's been remarkable.
Mark, great stuff. We'll talk to you after the break. Enjoy the rest.
All right, Neil, enjoy that wild vacation you're going on. I heard about that.
Yeah. As Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, after today's game again begins the break, and tonight the Futures game in San Diego where three players are going to represent the Rays. Now, one of the three, former first-round pick Ryan Stanek, was recently promoted to AAA Durham, and I asked Stanek what going to the Futures game means.
It was really cool. It was a really cool experience to be able to go and play in a Futures game. And when I got told, we were actually in Biloxi, and Brady just goes, "Hey Ryan, I need to see you in the office," and walked in, and he sat me down. And he goes, "What'd you do?" And I was like, "What?" Just kind of confused. And he goes, "What'd you do?" Because I got an email from Mitch, and he goes, "It said you're going to the Futures game," and I was like, That's pretty awesome. And like, it was like, he was just like, congratulations and stuff like that. It was a pretty neat deal.
What are you most excited about this experience?
Just being able to go out and play in like a game like this against some of the best players in minor league baseball, and like see how I stack up against those guys, and just be able to play like in a big league park and do all that stuff right now is cool.
Do you have a greater appreciation for this than most? I mean, for people who don't know your storyline, you were a first-round pick in 2013, but you kind of battled injury the first couple of years in the Rays system.
Yeah, my first couple of years weren't quite the smoothest of years. Didn't quite go like as I'd hoped my pro career would start. But it does feel good to finally like be back on track and doing things the way like I feel like I could have done from the get-go if I wouldn't have had some injuries and stuff like kind of pop up. But it does feel good to be able to do something like this and be recognized for like playing how I feel like I'm capable of playing again.
You mentioned the chance to play in a big league ballpark in San Diego for the Futures game. And again, we're chatting with pitcher Ryan Stanek. And Ryan, in spring training, you got a chance to pitch against major leaguers in Lakeland. I got to see you face the Tigers, and you had four pretty good innings, and it looked like if the gun was right, you're throwing 98 to 100 miles an hour and change. How much confidence did that give you, that outing that you had there going into the regular season?
A lot, actually. I feel like because it's one of those things where like I faced most of their starting lineup, and it's a pretty dang good lineup that they have. So it's like being able to go out there and have some success against them and hold my own kind of makes you realize that it's not that far off, like being able to have some success at that level, like realizing that even if you make a mistake, sometimes they'll like they're not perfect up there at all times. Like it's one of those things where sometimes you see, like as you're going through like the minor leagues and stuff like that, you think that like big leaguers never make mistakes and stuff like that, and just realizing that like your stuff and what you do is good enough to compete, I feel like is a big step.
The velocity that you're showing this year so far, is it higher than it's been? And if so, have you done anything differently, or did you do something differently in the off season to get ready?
I've been able to do like I was able to throw like this like in college, here and there, like at the top end, but like consistently, I've actually been throwing a little bit harder than I had in college, which has been kind of cool. And I really didn't do anything like out of the ordinary training wise. I just kind of went into off season with the mindset that I wanted to get stronger, be just in better shape, and just healthy, and kind of like tailor my whole workout to like building strength early and then to like maintaining like good health and flexibility and stability and stuff like that towards the end as we got closer to spring training, and it's kind of worked out for me.
Obviously it has. You know, you began the year in the rotation and then you moved to the bullpen and you've really taken off since then. What was the thought process when you originally went to the bullpen? What was the feeling? And obviously you've embraced it.
Yeah, initially I was a little like disappointed because I felt like I'd thrown pretty well. Like I had a couple games where kind of I feel like it skewed my numbers a little bit. But I mean, it's like I'm here to do whatever it takes to get to the big leagues and be a factor and try to get there as fast as possible is of course the goal. And if throwing in the bullpen is going to get me into the big leagues faster, that's what I'm more than willing to do.
What's been the biggest adjustment, the mental or the physical, of preparing your body to pitch out of the pen?
I would say probably a bigger load, like a little bit physically, just because you're used to having consistent, like 5 days off, mm-hmm. like, and then throwing, being able to have that for sure rest. But other than that, I don't like mentally. It's just not trying to conserve anything. You just go out there and attack for however long you're in there. Go as hard as you can, as long as you can, and let the manager decide when you're done.
Do you think it's kind of an advantage for you, the fact that you're only going to face, or at least in most of these cases, it looks like you haven't faced anyone more than once. You know, you're going once through a lineup, and your stuff obviously is pretty explosive.
Yeah, it definitely helps whenever you only get to see the lineup one time. Everybody has their scouting reports, and they know like that I'm somebody that throws a fastball a lot, and most teams go out there and try to be like aggressive early, and they don't want to get behind. So if I can execute a couple of good pitches early and put them in a hole, that makes it a lot easier because they can't really see everything. They just have to try to jump on one pitch early, and it puts me in a good position to like execute good pitches, I feel like.
And that's now Durham reliever Ryan Stanek headed to tonight's Futures game with Montgomery starting pitcher Chi-Wei Hu.
Just feel good. I try working hard this season, and even thinking about Futures game. But I think last year. Last year, not in the Futures game. So this year, I'm in the Futures game, I feel very excited and feel very happy and I feel good.
Why have you done well this year?
Just keep working hard, and I know in the double is that was very the label is very good. Like everybody is good, like team is good, and I'm just trying doing best one I need to do, and best one I do.
How have the coaches helped you this year?
They want me. Because I have like fastball, curveball, changeout, and curveball before, and I only feel like that in palm ball, and they wanted me working slider, and they helped me like how they can consistent like quickly finish the hitter, like you don't need to throw a lot of balls, like finish the hitter. Like, help me throw like long innings, like short innings, and give me my velocity every inning to stand. First two innings, you throw hot, but after three innings, your velocity is going down.
That is Chi-Wei Hu, who's been top 10 in the AA Southern League in ERA for most of the year and headed to the Futures game. The third race prospect at tonight's game in San Diego is perhaps the best prospect in the race system in 20-year-old AA shortstop Willy Adames, who is thrilled for the opportunity.
Oh, my God. That's a huge blessing for me. You know, I feel blessed and thankful of God to give me this opportunity to go to the Futures game. That was, like, one of my goals for this year. I mean, we've been working for that, and when Brady told me that, I mean, I wasn't expecting that news that he's gonna tell me that, but it was huge for me. I mean, I feel really good, man. I can't tell you how happy I was when he told me that I was about to go to this game. But it was unbelievable, man.
What are you most excited about that game?
I mean, to be there with competing with all those guys, with all those really good players that they're gonna be there, and to play in the big league field, the San Diego field. I think that's really, really, really impressive for me, and so special, man. I'm just happy, man.
You obviously, when you get invited to the Futures game, you've had a good year. So what do you think, where do you think you're better than last year?
I think I'm better this year mentally than the field, because last year I was like kind of frustrated a little bit after the first half. And this year I think I'm more mature, and I've been working on my defense and my hitting. Right now, I'm not doing very well, but we're working with my coach, Dement, and my manager, Brady. We're working on my hitting, and I think I'm better mentally this year than last year.
And I know how much winning means to you. You're winning in the second half. How important is that to you?
Oh my God, it's huge, man. We didn't win the first half, but I think we're gonna do the second half because we start doing the little things on the field and as a team, and the team is playing really well. Pitching is doing well. Hitting, we're doing the big hit at the right moment, and the team is doing pretty well right now. So that means a lot.
Now, for you, playing, you're only 20 still. You're playing in the Southern League. How much better is the competition this year than last year?
It's pretty different, I think, here because it's most guys with more experience and guys like strong. I think they're stronger, and you gotta be more mentally prepared here. And the competition is pretty hard here. I think it's harder than the Warriors State League, but because we got a lot of good players over here. And
for you, do you have any, other than trying to win a championship, do you have any goals for the second half?
Like I say to my manager, Brady, my first goal for this year was like shoot the game. And after winning a championship, my second goal is to get that call out to the big league. And we're working for it, you know.
You got to play in some spring training games this year. Did that help your confidence?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. It's pretty good to go to the big league games and spring training to be with all those guys that we just saw them in TV, and like they are kind of our role to go to the big league. And I think it helped me.
Did you learn a lot?
Yeah. To be there, and those guys always talk to us, and they tell us what they come through from the minor leagues. And I was talking a lot with Archer, and he was telling me a lot of good things that helped me to get more mature mentality.
Well, hopefully more good days are ahead for you. Enjoy the Futures game in San Diego. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, man, for having me.
And that is Willie Adames, and you can watch the Futures game tonight on the MLB Network at 7 this evening. Coming up, we'll have Cliff Floyd of MLB Network right after this on the Rays Baseball Network.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball and have the pleasure of joining us a guy who was on the Rays World Series team in 08, and he's become a mainstay now on MLB Network, Cliff Floyd. Cliff, thanks for a few minutes.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Let's touch on the American League races right now. The East is the closest one right now between the Orioles and the Red Sox and the Jays. Which of the three teams do you like and why?
Well, you know, I've been talking about the O's a lot because their offense is so deep. A little worried about the starting pitch. I think the back end with Britton is pretty good. You know, I look at Toronto as being that team. If they can keep the big boys in the middle, once they get Joey Bats back on the field, and Encarnacion's having a terrific year. Tulo just got back out there. Michael Saunders, no, he's not stealing bags, but he has been a catalyst for Gibby in the middle of that lineup. So if they can get a starting pitcher before that July 31st deadline, they'll be another team because Aaron Sanchez is probably going to the bullpen. And then when you look at the overall, the Red Sox ain't going nowhere. I know their pitching is a little suspect, but, you know, they're hitting the cover off the baseball. They're doing all the things to keep themselves in the game. If they add a pitcher, you know, it's gonna be who really beats up on the outside of the AL East. It's probably gonna be the guy. So I'm leaning towards, you know, Toronto for the simple fact that they got a little bit more depth from a pitching standpoint.
And certainly that has come to fruition to this point. The most quality starts right now in that division and the league. The team that in the American League has been most impressive overall with the pitching is Cleveland. How deep can they go? I mean, they're doing this really without Michael Brantley, their best player.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, I think when you look at the production from first base and DH with Napoli and Santana, it's been off the charts, right? And then supporting cast is always big when you talk about, you know, accountability with young guys. And I think Terry Francona has done a terrific job. Tyler Naquin, Lonnie Chisenhall, Jose Ramirez, all these guys are getting a shot at the title. And if you want to stay, And, you know, I always say opportunity for young guys don't come too often, but when you get it, you have to take full advantage of it. So I think they're pushing all the right buttons, but the guys have to come to the park knowing what their role is and not trying to do too much. But you said it right. The pitching has been terrific. Trevor Bauer goes to the bullpen, comes back, and it's been terrific. Josh Tomlin, everybody's worried about the back half of rotations. They have the best.
Without question. Who adds among the other American League teams? Because Texas has been among the teams with the best record, but they've had a lot of injuries to their starting pitching.
Yeah, they really have. And, you know, I come out of spring training, I looked at that squad and told Jeff Banas, if you don't have the best bullpen in baseball, I don't know who does. And all of a sudden, it flipped, right? They didn't have the best bullpen. Sean Tolleson was awful early on. But when you look at, you know, losing Darvish and losing Holland and losing Kobe Lewis, how do you go out there and win ball games? They've been struggling from a starting, you know, rotation standpoint. And if they don't make a move, I mean, they have the luxury right now, right? Because you have a little lead, a little cushion, but that'll go fast.
And Houston's kind of starting to find itself a little bit, maybe starting to be the team that we thought they'd be at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think that's true 100% because, you know, I mean, when you talk about not having Dallas Keuchel as been what Dallas Keuchel has been, somebody else has to step up. I think when you look at the bullpen, A.J. Hinch did a terrific job, right? Will Harris now is a closer. Luke Gregerson, Ken Giles is starting to come on. So if you can bridge that gap, shorten the games a little bit. They do have some youngsters, and in this day and age, you and I both know, they 100 pitches, we go into the bullpen. They have a nice little bullpen going to Houston.
They do, and they also have some of the best young players in the game, and that helps too. How much do you like Carlos Correa and George Springer at the top of that lineup?
I love them. I think, you know what, A.J. Hinch has done a terrific job of understanding, you know, how to maximize the potential, right? Maximize what you're going to, maximize the production. And if you're going to get these guys to, you know, to play up the capabilities, then put a little pressure on them. You know what, George Springer, you're on the road. Guess who hitting first? You are. So you're going to get ready at 6:45 to go for that 7:05 pitch. Mind over matter. And I think he's done a nice job of selling in, not trying to do too much, taking more pitches. He's not selling bags, which is not a big deal because you got Altuve and Correa, as you mentioned, you know, doing their job.
The one team we haven't mentioned is the defending world champs. Kansas City has really been hit by the injury bug. Can they get back in this and get to the postseason right now?
They have the mindset to do it. I really think they do. I think, you know, when you lose Wade Davis, then you start to, like, you know, you start to lose your hair a little bit. And I think Ned Yost is trying to figure out. But they had a nice little bullpen, you know, as well. If getting some good play from the little youngsters that have come up, right? You get Alex Gordon back on the field. That's been good. So the nucleus of their squad, I know you don't have Moose over at third, but their youngsters have stepped up and did a terrific job. And I think, you know, when you win, something about just going to the post and knowing that, you know, we have a shot to stand this thing. Some teams will probably be deer in headlights because they haven't been there. And then, you know what, we've won and been there the last couple of years. It'll work in our favor.
Handicap the American League for me. Which team is aggressive to add starting pitching or bullpen pitching that need it? And then after that, who do you see as the teams to beat in this league going forward?
Well, I think for me, when you talk about adding starting pitching, you know, it's easy, you know, when you look at Boston, right? When you invest in a guy like David Price and you have Big Poppy in the last, you know, year of his career, you're gonna probably exalt every option you can. I think Dave DeBrasi will do that. They have the means. When you look at Texas, they also have it. So, you know, I look at both those teams and wonder who's going to pull a trigger and maybe come down here to Tampa and try to get one of these young guys that they have here. So, for me, it's Boston and the Texas Rangers that need to probably add starting pitching. If Toronto does, and then I think they're the team that comes out in the American League.
And where does Cleveland fit in all that?
You know what? That's a great question because I think Cleveland is in the conversation. I talked about them yesterday. When you talk, you know, I was asked about who's sharing the top spot when you talk about rankings. And I threw Cleveland out there, and people was like, well, you know, they'll fall off. They're not going to fall off because they have starting pitching. The only reason they will fall off is if they get these guys in the second half of the season who haven't played this much, they start to get overexposed and tired. If that happens, then we'll have a team that played great and then be frustrated in the end because they don't have enough stamina to get through.
Should be a great final couple months. Thanks for joining us, Cliff.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And that is Cliff Floyd of MLB Network and, of course, Array in 2008 on the World Series team. Special thanks to him and all of our guests on the show, pitching coach Jim Hickey, bullpen coach Stan Borowski, hitting coach Derek Shelton, as well as Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, Rays outfielder Brandon Guyer, and Futures Game participants Willie Adames, Chi-Wei Hu, and Ryan Stanek. And certainly special thanks to our producer today, Trey Downey. Next week, we'll get to know more about Alex Colomé and his All-Star Game experience. If you ever have something you want to hear on the show, just tweet me at Neil Solons. I'm Neil Solons. Stay tuned for the pregame show on the Rays Baseball Network.